the goals or the outcome is secondary. There are points to strive for, but to be mindful and to be aware in the process that you have yourself in regards to running, is really what matters the most.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 258, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to remind you about the Coterie, which is the hybrid training program that I have founded. And we added a few new members recently, and we've still got some room for some more members as well. So if you're looking for a coach that you know, that maybe isn't quite the cost of a traditional one-on-one coach, but really kind of, you know, provides that one-on-one customized program with some of the benefits of a group program, specifically the accountability and that community feel, you might be interested in the Coterie. It might be something that might be right up your alley. So check out dizruns.com/coterie. That's Coterie for more details. And that page honestly isn't real great right now, but it is going to be updated soon. And let me know what questions you might have and what issues you might be worried about. And I'll let you know, shoot from the hip, straight up, kind of what the group is all about and whether or not it might be a good fit for you. And if it is, we'd love to have you. So check it out once again, dizruns.com/coterie. And now let's get on with today's episode. Hey guys, one of the things that I love doing on the show is having previous guests back for a round two to find out just, you know, what's new in their lives and in their running since the first time that they were on the show. And that's exactly what we are doing today. When I first talked with today's guest back in episode 190, he was wrapping up an epic year of running and racing that included 5 full marathons. He'd also in that year managed to reach the goals of qualifying for both Boston and New York and lower his marathon PR by a pretty incredible 22 minutes. So clearly 2015 was a good year. So today I'm excited to be able to reconnect with Michael Deza and find out kind of what's new for him since the last time we chatted and you know, continue to look forward to what the future may hold. So Michael, thanks for coming back and joining us today, man.
It's great to be back, Denny.
And guys, if you haven't connected with Michael already, you can find his website at mrmiles.org. And on Twitter, you can find him at Michael_Deza. That's Deza. And on Instagram, he's got his, I'm assuming probably his initials. It's his handle there is m.a.d.and1984. I'll have those links and anything else to, you know, links to anything else that we talk about today on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/258. So, Michael, you've been here before. You know what that first question is, and I actually went back and listened to the episode earlier today to kind of refresh everything that we had talked about, and you kind of waffled on the opening question. So I'm going to answer it again and see if your answer is still a waffle or if it's more direct. And if it's still a waffle, maybe we'll change it up a little bit. But that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
I think after completing Boston, I have come to a clear answer that the half marathon is my favorite distance to race.
Okay.
The blend of distance as well as the intensity of it. It's also, too, I guess it's just from the first experience of having it be my first type of marathon. Mm-hmm. And it, I guess you could say, like, you never forget your first love. And so for me, that experience of the half marathon was so powerful that it still continues to stay with me. And that even as I've done the full marathons, I find myself being drawn back to the half marathon, I guess you could say, as paramount.
Gotcha. What was it about Boston that makes, when you said that after Boston, you know, you kind of have solidified, I thought for sure that you were going to say that the marathon was your favorite, because that was what the waffle was last time, was between the half and the full. So what was it about Boston or that experience or just the new perspective that says that it is, you know, I guess what was it about Boston that makes it say that, no, it's definitely the half marathon now?
Gosh, I mean, like, leading up to Boston and training, I was really reflective in my runs just off the bat. And then the entire time that I was running Boston, I just still continued to think about, okay, like, why are you doing this? Why? And for me, I think Boston served as a, it served as a goal to push me out of the current limits that I had set for myself. And I realized that once I conquered it, I guess I had a better sense of what I was capable of and what I wanted to do for my next goal. And that is to turn pro in one of the marathon categories. And for me, just intuitively, it's leaning towards the half marathon. And I think Boston just showed me that. It's like, you know, you've conquered something that was really challenging, and now you need to understand running goes back to the essence of it's for you. Like, you run for yourself, mm-hmm. Not to be so much pressured by the masses of runners that often speak of the full marathon, like as the distance to run. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I guess you could say it's just like the clarity came from the experience with Boston.
Gotcha. So you're not necessarily completely turning away from the marathon. It's just that you know, when push comes to shove, the half's still a little bit more special and a little bit more what you're trying to focus on now going forward.
Yeah. I'm not going to abstain from it entirely, but it's just more of putting a focus on where I want to reach my goal of turning pro, and mm-hmm. just doing the math, I'm 19 minutes away from qualifying as a elite in the marathon category, and I'm 10 minutes away from the half marathon category. So just doing the math there, it's going to be a shorter time frame, mm-hmm. To qualify as an elite in the half marathon category. But I always have that option of doing the marathon, but just choosing a focus where I want to direct myself rather than spreading too thin.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more about Boston, though. You know, outside of that realization that you just kind of wanted to focus more on the half at that point, what was your experience like at Boston? Was it overall positive? Did you have a good run?
Yeah. The weather itself, I had already been checking it for about a week before it. And so the pattern basically showed that it was going to be a pretty hot one. And as far as it went for me, it's tempting to want a PR, mm-hmm. your next race. So I kind of had that in mind, and I had been training for that. But when I did a couple of practice runs before the marathon, I kind of felt like, okay, just be ready to change your goal. And then on race day, when I was lined up in the corral, it was hot even before the race started. And just my gut was telling me, like, do not try to be a hero. Set a different goal, because this is going to be a hot one.
Right.
And so then I just ended up changing my goal and said, you know, let's go for a sub-3. And the most important is to have fun.
And did you have fun?
Yeah. The first marathon that I had experienced where there was full support of the crowd every mile. Mm-hmm. I think we went through 7 or 8 towns, and just having the crowds of people just cheering you on, you felt really connected to the city of Boston.
Right. Yeah, it's something that I'm definitely looking forward to. I haven't gotten to the point where I can qualify yet, but that's one of the big goals, and that's one of the things that I'm looking forward to too, is just that vibe and just the energy that you know, there are no, from everything that I've heard and everything that obviously that you just said, there's no dead spots on the course where you're ever kind of without that support, which is going to be for me at least, it'll be probably the first time that I'll ever have experienced that, is at least, you know, as far as I can tell, I've certainly never had a race like that before.
Yeah, it's one of a kind. I think that this is something that every marathoner should experience at least once. Mm-hmm. Just because this is one of the oldest marathons. It has so much history for marathon runners themselves, and then as well as going back into Roberta Gibb and how she had basically like broken the misconception that women couldn't run endurance races. And so for her, like, it was really cool going to the expo and seeing these historic runners give presentations, and you get a sense of just how important the Boston Marathon was to so many people and to different genders.
Right. Well, and not only was, but continues to be. I mean, it continues to be one of the from what I understand, I mean, just setting the trends for the marathon majors as far as you know, not only how, you know, just how to put on a good event, but I believe they do a lot of this stuff as far as like equality and pay and things like that at the elite level that, you know, some of the other marathon majors and other bigger marathons haven't quite caught up with, right? And if, unless I may be mistaken, but I feel like that's what I heard when I was watching the race.
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely one of the ones that's most talked about. By far.
So what was your experience like with the Boston start, which was something that I know a lot of folks, you know, it's not something normal to ride the bus out at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning and then sit around for 3-4 hours until the race starts. Have you done that before in any of the races where you have to get there so early and then sit around? Whether you have or whether you haven't, how did that impact, do you think, especially with the heat, as it kept getting warmer and you're sitting there waiting? Did that have an impact, or what was that impact? What was that like for you?
So I actually had a different experience. I had a friend of the family's lived actually at the start in Hopkinton. So one of the things that I had found out when I went to the expo, when I was reading the itinerary, was there was a change in dropping off your gear, and you could no longer drop off at Hopkinton. There wouldn't be a bus that would take your gear down to the finish. And so for me, I was like looking at the start time, and of course doing the math, it's like, okay, so I'm going to be up for the next 4.5 hours before the race. That means I need to, you know, carry my pre-race food. I need to carry just a lot of things that end up causing stress. And so what I do is I basically just left everything. I decided sleep was more important. So I had worn my full marathon outfit, and I knew that they were going to provide Boston reflective blankets. So if it was going to get chilly, I did have a place to warm up. And then I would stay for a few minutes for the refreshments and, you know, communicate or communing with other runners. And then I would take the shuttle back to Hopkinton. And so for me, I was really glad that I did that, just because waking up, I was fully rested compared to being out in the heat, because it can drain you just standing around in the heat, even if you're not moving.
So what time, like how early did you end up get? I mean, if you were right there in Hopkinton, I'd imagine that you didn't have to get there, but you know, 45 minutes or something like that early before the race started, something like that, maybe.
I was up at my start time was at 10. So I was up at 7:30.
Nice.
Getting up, just, you know, like letting my thoughts just run around so I can, you know, like find some balance in them. And then, just doing like my dynamic warm-up stretches and, just like getting myself in the zone there, but just knowing that I didn't have that pressure of, having to be there for hours.
Well, and able to have, you know, like a normal kind of routine almost, you know, cause at least that's been something that I've experienced whenever I travel to a race and you're in a hotel. So you get, you don't have a kitchen. You can't have a normal kind of pre-race or pre-long run type of meal that you would normally have if you were at your, you know, staying at home or staying someplace that has a kitchen. So I'd imagine that probably had to at least have helped, or at least kind of decrease some of that stress anxiety of what might happen, because you're able to follow as close to the normal routine as possible.
It definitely gives you a sense of ease because you have that routine, and so anything that goes outside of the routine just makes you feel off because it's not what you've been used to. Mm-hmm. So, and plus for me, I really like eating real food,
right?
Like as much as possible, because I mean that's where you can get the best social nutrition. And so for me, I know what it's like having to do pre-race nutrition off of pre-packaged material, and just it's like eating crickets. Like I wouldn't do it unless I had to, like, but it'd be stressful just because it's like it's not part of the routine. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting real food, so anything that can keep you as close to the routine, I would focus on that as a bigger return than any other benefits. Like I'm sure it would have been comfortable having full gear to change into
mm-hmm.
after the marathon, but for me I would rather have had a better marathon than right. a better post-race experience.
Yeah, definitely. What's your maybe biggest or maybe picking just one might be halfway too impossible, but you know, one or two of the biggest takeaways or biggest memories that you'll have from running Boston this year?
The first one was finally getting to meet ultra marathon champ Scott Jurek. I was walking around the expo and I passed by the Cliff Bar station, and then caught someone in my peripheral, and I thought, oh, that's funny, it looks like Scott Jurek. And then I turned around and I was like, oh, it is Scott Jurek. So I got in line, and when he signed my autograph, like, we had a brief discussion, and it was cool just getting to talk to him and share a little bit about for me in Boston, and I to tell him about how his book Eat and Run was a big inspiration for me. So it was really cool to finally connect with someone that had been and continues to be an inspiration for me in running.
Mm-hmm.
The second memory is just the essence of, living out something that I had envisioned for so many years, feeling like it was a rite of passage, like something that was really difficult and had no idea how long it would take, but feeling that sense of fulfillment from staying on course, even the times where it felt like it was out of reach, but just continuing to push through. So I think this kind of experience has really changed the way that I look at any kind of upcoming challenges that seem like they're insurmountable or extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a little detour here. Go a little bit back in time. The podcast episode that I did on Marathon Monday was just a quick solo show, where I was kind of talking about some of the top things that I'm most looking forward to about, you know, achieving the goal of Boston, which obviously was a big goal of yours. And then, you qualified and you got to run the race. And I think that in doing that and talking about that and kind of thinking it out in my own head, I've kind of come to the conclusion that I think that the thing that I'm most looking forward to is the race that I'm able to qualify in. And like, you know, I'm looking forward to running Boston. I don't want that to come across that I'm not, but I think that that's going to be the celebration and the, you know, the real emotional moments and the really, like, you know, I just think that feeling when I cross that finish line at whatever race it is and whatever, I mean, whether it's this year, next year, two, you know, whatever, however far down the road it is, where I can look up at the clock and be like, yes, I made it. I've qualified. I think that's going to be I think as much of my Boston Marathon moment as anything that happens in the race. And who knows? I mean, maybe once I'm there that will change, but that's kind of how I see it now. So I'd love to take a little trip back to the race where you qualified the first time. I know you in 2015, you qualified, you know, you ran times that were fast enough multiple times, but what was that first race like, the first time that you qualified for Boston, and what was that, the emotions like, what was your experience of like, I've been working towards this goal. Like you said, it was something that maybe seemed unattainable at times, but you you did it. And what was that kind of could we go down that route or that road of what that whole experience was like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I remember coming on the end of 2014. Once again, I had tried to qualify for Boston and I didn't. And I remember going towards the end of the year and talking with my girlfriend, and she could see it, like that I was sad that, like, I'd been really pushing for 2014 to qualify and I didn't, and I was talking of, you know, maybe I should do other races, less distance or whatnot, and she could just see that I was talking like in a sense of defeat. And she was probably the most pivotal person to really inspire me and keep me going. And so because of her encouragement and inspiration, I took a look at 2015, and I had decided to do the Modesto Marathon. And I remember just the training. Everything felt right. But I didn't want to think about it too much, or like to get too excited and to set myself up for a disappointment. Mm-hmm. So it was just like knowing there was an elephant in the room, but not talking about it. But it was a good elephant. So when I ran the race, you know, I started out and everything felt great. The weather itself was still 60 degrees and sunny, early enough in the morning that the sun had not yet hit the high point. And, you know, as I'm running the miles, part of me is like, could this be it? Like, is this the marathon that you will qualify? You know? And so I had that voice in my head, like, is this it? Is it it? And then, you know, just trying to calm myself down, like, don't get too ahead of yourself. Yes. Yes. We're on point. We're on time, mm-hmm. but don't get too excited. And, it was definitely like one of those surreal moments of, I felt like I was in another world, but at the same time, I was trying to keep part of my awareness in the marathon, but it's like, I found myself drifting in my head, mm-hmm. like almost like being in like a dream state. Like almost like my brain was envisioning qualifying as I was running. And I remember reaching about mile 17, and like I took a look at my watch, my pace was on time, and everything felt great. And I was like, this is too good to be true. Like, I can't, I like, so, like, is there something that is going to go wrong? You know, like I'm looking for it. Mm-hmm. And then mile 18, I felt like I hit the wall. It was like this instant feeling. And then I was like, uh-oh. And I felt this drop in energy. And all of a sudden my brain's panicking, like trying to scramble to find something to like, to fix the situation or to like to get back on point and rebalanced. And for me, it was just like, it was an amazing experience of like what it found as a means to like to restore myself. And it was a memory of me and my mom. So growing up, I was diagnosed with ADD, and at that time I was told that I couldn't learn like everyone else. So because of that, I was treated differently. And so my mom always was very encouraging and like repeatedly would tell me like over and over again that I was capable of doing great things, even though doctors may have said differently or teachers may have said differently. And so I used to get like overwhelmed a lot because I was teased a lot because I was treated different. And, you know, there were times where I would just break down. And I would be crying, and my mom would pick me up, and she'd wrap her arms around me, and she would ask me, "What does the Bible say you are?" And I would recite back to her what she had taught me in scripture, which was, I'm the head, not the tail, above only, not beneath. God has not given me the spirit of fear, but the power of love and a sound mind. Mm. And it, like, for the remaining eight plus miles, that was all I could think of, was that memory, those scriptures. And I kept saying them over and over again. It was like nothing else was there. And it was like one of the most, I guess, like, biggest revelations was that the essence of running was love. That it wasn't about, you know, like boosting your ego or pride, but it came back to, you know, loving yourself as well as the love that you receive from others that makes you, that can make you great at doing things. Mm-hmm. Even something such as running. And so for me, when I hit mile 23, I knew, I was like, even if I do slow down a bit, I've got it.
Right.
And, I crossed the finish line in 3 hours and 2 minutes, I think it was like 2 minutes and 40 seconds under the cutoff time. And so for me, it was like, once I had crossed the finish line, for me, it was like, no one can take this experience away from me. Like, no one can take this moment away from me. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what made it so meaningful, was that the process of striving for Boston, was what defined me. And running Boston, it was like celebrating that. But first time qualifying for Boston was something that I think is almost as equal in importance as mm-hmm. running Boston for the first time.
Yeah, it's something that I haven't been there, but I do think I'm looking forward to that moment of knowing that not only did I qualify, but, you know, that I beat, or I have a pretty good chance of beating a projected cutoff, because of course we all know that can get in the way where you qualify and you're all excited and then you didn't qualify by enough, and that can be I don't even want to go there. That would be somebody, I don't know how I would react to that, but just that moment would be I imagine, and like you said, I mean, just the feeling of love and just the pushing through and the accomplishment, like, it's probably something that I mean, might be a little bit hard to put in words, but you did a very eloquent job, so thank you for taking us down that route.
Yeah.
So what's after that, you know, and then you ran Boston. So kind of, you know, fast forward from Modesto last year to running Boston this year. What's kind of next on the agenda? Are you still plan on New York, I'm assuming, but I know now that you're focused on the half, so maybe that's changed. What's kind of, you know, going forward looking like?
I definitely want to do New York, but I want to do New York in the half marathon category. Mm. So I'm pretty much on point for that. This year, my focus for the half marathon is going to be the San Jose Rock and Roll Marathon in October. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the one that I'm going to use to qualify for New York, as well as so far I have the current goal of using that as a means to qualify for the elite category in the half marathon. Mm. So with this merit, like, compared to this from last year compared to this year, it's become a lot more focused. Last year I felt like I had something to prove, like to get past a certain milestone. Mm. And so running, I mean, like, when I look back at it, I asked myself, like, do you realize how crazy you were running, like, 5 marathons in a, you know, in a single year, as well as, like, you didn't space them out. Right. Like, and so, and I guess for me, it's like, I was so driven to achieve, these goals. Like, I felt so pressured by myself to conquer them in that year that I just zeroed in on that. And That was all that I was thinking about. And then when I look back at it, it's like, yeah, that was kind of gnarly that you did all those things in such a in a short time frame. And so now, like, once that that has been achieved, it's more of like looking at, okay, let's focus then on achieving goals now that and not racing so much just for the sake of it, but racing for the purpose of the goals you've set. And so focusing like on Boston, which was had pretty much been that was the only marathon that I have done this far. There was no tune-up races. There was definitely like intense trainings that mimicked the tune-up races, but I just really wanted just to take that focus of, you know, like I run because I love it, not because I get a t-shirt and a medal at the end. And so for me, it's like, yeah, like focus on your goals, but don't be so pressured about constantly signing up for a race. But make the races that you do sign up for count. And so I'm confident that I'll qualify for the half marathon category for New York, which is it's the cutoff time is 1 hour and 21 minutes. So my previous or my current best is 1:21:21. So I'm certain that I'll be able to resolve the 21 seconds with the training this year.
So I guess I'm just I'm not quite sure, I guess, how this New York process works. So you've already qualified to run the New York Marathon, but yeah, is a different qualification standard to be able to run in the elite wave of the half marathon? Is that kind of what you're saying, what I'm getting out of this?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm set. Like, if I wanted to run the full marathon category, I could submit my time from 2015, and that's good to go. But because I want to focus on the half marathon distance, I have to qualify with a half marathon.
Okay, and is that still happen like the same time, same weekend, or same time frame as the full?
Yeah, don't quote me on it. I believe it is. It's just that we're going to be sent off in different wave times. Mm-hmm. Like I mean, like with Boston, they had basically segmented the waves every 30 minutes.
Right.
So I believe that that's what they're going to do in New York. I know that Chicago does it differently. They have the half marathon, I think in the fall, and then the full marathon in the is spring. Months. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Chicago does it differently, but from my supposed knowledge right now, New York does it in the same.
Gotcha. So you mentioned, you know, that you hadn't done a race, you know, a tune-up race marathon type of thing for Boston. And then you're eyeballing Rock and Roll San Jose, which I know that was your first half marathon. So that's kind of a special place in your heart as well, that running that race as the one you're going to target. So is that basically like there's no real races, just lots of training between then and now? Or are there other things on the calendar between now and San Jose?
There were some races that I had wanted to do just because they were preset goals. Like there was a 10K that I wanted to run this year, which I ran 2 years ago, and it was my first 10K and I got first place. And so for me, it was like, oh, like, let's see if we can do it again. Mm. And then there was a trail race that I had done for the past three years. And I had been cursed with second place for the 3 years. So it was just like, part of me was haunted. Like, come on, like 3 years, like God help me out. Just get me on first place podium, please. So part of me was excited about that, prior to this year. But then, the more that I thought about it in my Boston training, I felt that I had reached some kind of calmness. It's like, okay, I don't need to prove myself in everything. Like just find like find a flow, find a rhythm. For me also too, like after qualifying for Boston, I just realized like, you know, I love running and yeah, it's fun doing races, but there's so much more outside of running that I want to give my time to. And I mean, my girlfriend has been very patient with me in the times that I've been doing my endurance, you know, training or my long runs. You know, like schedules have been rearranged to accommodate me, and I want to put more time towards her, towards us. And for me, running has just given me that time, like, because you can think so much whenever you are in that steady flow of running. Like your mind just thinks about life. And for me, I was thinking about just our relationship. I mean, she's been with me since before I had wanted to do Boston, and then she was with me every step of the way qualifying for Boston. And it's always it's touching going back in the photos and seeing her throughout those moments, and it's like, yeah, she's the most important person to me. And I need to look at our relationship also as a quote unquote race itself, like this is an epic paramount race that I want to do well in. And so I want to put that time into our relationship, because I don't think that running is as important. So if running gets in the way of our relationship, then I want to resolve that, because I think that's something that I learned a lot in striving for Boston, is that you can get very focused on the goal that you can't see the world around you other than in terms of qualifying for Boston. So it's almost like giving someone a hammer, and all they see is nails.
Right.
They don't see anything else. They just see nails to hit. So I had been there, and I just had woken up to it and realized, yeah, like there's more to life, community, relationships. And so for me, yeah, it's definitely a lot more about being more holistic in the way that I see my life, and realizing that running brings a joy, but to have that awareness of when my passion for running begins to cut into other important things in my life.
Talking about the kind of the relationships and things like that, and not necessarily specifically with your girlfriend, although that could absolutely be part of this question as well, but do you tend to do a lot of your runs solo, or do you have folks, you know, a community of friends or you know, running partners or things like that you run with regularly, or is it kind of a split for you?
For the most part, I have solo runs, but I always am up for the opportunity to train with people. There's a couple of friends that I had met through various marathons that on occasion will meet on the trail, and we'll get together and do a nice training run. And it's refreshing when we get to do that. There is a sense of whenever I run by myself, I get to tap into myself. It's like, it's like feeding my soul. And then when I run with people, I get to share myself, you know, or we get to share each other's energy. And I think it's great to have that. But my preference for the most part is doing solo runs. And then I guess you could say like sprinkling in group runs, just because of my, I guess you could say just my, like, my initial or my initial set point is to be reflective, and so being with people is more about sharing, and so I need to have that reflection before I can share with people.
Gotcha. So your solo runs, it gives you that time to reflect and to be with, you know, you kind of, you mentioned it before, but be in your own head and think things through and you know, whether it's meditate, whether it's pray, whatever, you have that time. But when you're with other people, it's just, I mean, you're talking, so it doesn't happen as much.
Yeah. And I mean, just like, it's like looking at too, just like a good amount of the day for anybody is spent working, errands to run. So you often find yourself on someone else's time. Mm. And I find that when I get up in the morning and when I run, time is suspended, so to speak, like obligatory time is nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. It's just me running. So there is that sense of freedom before I, you know, clock in to the world, which I think is really good. It's good to have that time, because then when I do clock in, I've had my sense of like fulfillment, and it's like, okay, I can work, I can do these things, I can be around people, and I can share things because I've had my time.
Mm-hmm. As we're getting kind of close to wrapping things up, I got a little bit, you know, another philosophical question for you, I guess. I feel like we've had a decent amount of philosophical discussion today, which is always exciting and refreshing, you know, a little less of the running history, because we covered that before. And so we're able to be a little more talking about some other different things. But I'd love to know, and this is one of those questions that I don't ask often, but every time that I do, it gets great answers. And it's just simply, what has running taught you about yourself? What have you learned about yourself over the course of all the miles and the races and things like that you've done?
Running, I mean, so many lessons that running continues to bring. But I think running has really taught me that I am capable of solving as well as conquering challenges. That I possess that ability. Mm. 'Cause I felt like I had developed this habit of seeking help, expedient help, you know, someone show me this, tutor me. And I feel that that is something that people can end up, it turns into a handicap for people, because they reach a point of difficulty, and then that first moment of difficulty, they begin looking outside for help. Mm-hmm. And for me with running, I had set this goal of, I want to do this myself. I want to coach myself. I want to understand running. I want to learn the science of it. I want to learn the drills, the training. I want this to be something like, I want this to be a trial to test and see whether or not I can do this myself. And so running has just really showed me that as long as you apply yourself, you will be able to learn and become self-sufficient. It doesn't mean that you're going to be 100% without the need of others' assistance, mm-hmm. but you will learn a lot from yourself. Could I have qualified for Boston faster seeking the help of coaches? There's a pretty good chance. Mm-hmm. Would I have learned as much about myself? No.
Right.
Because now I feel so much more at peace whenever I go running. I stopped asking the question, how can I be right about my run training? And I started asking, how could I be wrong? Because I realized that there were so many ways that were out there that were spoken of as, this is the way to run, this is the right drills. And I realized, so long as I understood how to measure success, you know, like looking at the data in clusters, mm-hmm. You know, like, was I getting faster and was I remaining injury free? Okay. You know, and like understanding how to set metrics and points of measurement myself that could confirm that I was making progress. And this gave me this opportunity just to basically know myself inside and out. And I think it's something that for all aspiring runners in whatever distances, to really know that, because this is something that just gets you to be in tune with yourself. It gives you a sense of self-efficacy and confidence that you can take into other areas of life aside from running. So the biggest thing is just running has taught me the process is what defines you. And so long as you apply yourself, giving your best, failing forward, daring greatly, you're going to learn, you're going to improve. And that's probably the most important part of it. The goals or the outcome is secondary. They're points to strive for, but to be mindful and to be aware in the process that you have yourself in regards to running is really what matters the most.
Gotcha. So I've got to ask, because this is the thing that just kind of creeps into my mind now. You mentioned being self-coached and whatnot, and that maybe you could have gone a little bit faster, improved a little bit quicker with the help of a coach. Now with the, you know, turning pro as kind of the next big goal that you're striving towards, are there any thoughts of possibly seeking out someone to help speed up that process, or are you going to continue the self-coaching route?
Oh, so now I'm a waffle about that now, because it's not that I have had any bias or disdain for outside coaching. Mm-hmm. I just wanted, like, this whole experience with Boston was about proving to myself that I was capable. So I wanted to have a sense of self-efficacy, rather than just having this habit of constantly reaching out. Mm-hmm. I think something that I'm considering right now is that when I reach the elite level, I want to consider looking at elite coaches. Mm-hmm. So much as I've taken a look at certain running teams and have found that there's a certain point at which they take notice of runners that are interested in joining their team. And a lot of these requirements is, you know, are you an elite? What is your resume? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I've just seen like, okay, so like I have to have proven myself in some manner before they can actually take me seriously, because there is probably many runners that want to sign up and learn and join the team. But, these teams are focused on performance in a professional category. And so they only want to work with people that have, that are in that caliber. So for me, I kind of look at it from that standpoint of when you get there to the elite category, there'll be opportunities for that.
Right.
Prior to that, I want to continue self-coaching and just continue learning about myself. But once I cross that milestone or achieve it, then I'll consider that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, it's, you know, obviously what you're doing is working. I mean, shoot, 22 minutes on the marathon PR in about a calendar year is pretty impressive. And you know, I mean, you keep going, you keep dedicating yourself and keep at it. And who knows? And if the right fit is available, you'll know it. And at that point, you know, you can make that decision. But as long as you're still seeing progress, I mean, you know, more power to you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I think the most important thing is really just so long as you yourself can measure your success, that means you're moving forward. Mm-hmm. I always maintain this awareness that how I'm training is not the best, but I am seeing progress. And so I'm not as worried. I'm not as pressured to think in maximizing terms like, oh no, I'm not getting the best training. It's mm-hmm. like perfection's unknowable and I can lose sleep so much. I have lost sleep about like wondering what training plan was the best one and if I should scratch the one I have and you know, like do another one. And I've been there. Mm-hmm. I freaked out, like, you know, wondering if the supplements I've been using were hindering me, all the worrying, and it didn't do anything. I think that's something for each runner to understand is that, as long as you're making progress, keep on pushing forward. And if you do come across potential new training programs or ways of training, take it into consideration. I mean, there's cost in everything. Mm-hmm. And you know, like financially, are you willing to put in the time or the money as well as time-wise? You know, does this new training program require a substantial amount of time that's much more than what you're willing to? So there's all these things that go into consideration that it's like, yes, like this will give you that desired outcome, but it will cost you a lot more than what you're willing. Mm-hmm. So there's always, it's always about like taking a step back and realizing like how these new offers or opportunities in training are going to affect you, and weighing the decision in more than just one component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, just as true with running coaching or anything else in life. There's always those opportunity costs, and there's the financial cost, there's the time cost, there's the commitment. I mean, it's all about finding the right balance and what works best for you, and then once you find that, I would at least say that you're probably always going to keep tinkering a little bit and trying to find, can I make this little tweak and make it better, make this little tweak and make it better. But ultimately you just keep experimenting and trying, and like you said, as long as you keep moving forward, you're doing something right, and you keep trying to make that progress.
And most of all, have fun.
Yes.
Seriously, have fun, because there is so many anal retentive marathoners that I come across that I try to wave to as I'm passing them by, and they're too busy tapering to actually give me a wave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I've been there, man. I've been there so focused where it's like, I'm not. And I think it's just the essence of people are so driven for like being like bottom line thinkers. Like, unless I've achieved X, mm-hmm. I am not happy. But I mean, more like the more and more that I talk to the elite runners, they speak of happiness as a state of being. Mm-hmm. It, you know, the joy lies in actually doing the running, not in crossing the finish line. And I just try to just take a page from the books of these people, because they have achieved a goal that I want, and they're happy, even when they don't make the podium. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's the most important thing. It's like, be happy as you're doing the things, and when you achieve whatever goals you have in running, then that complements the current happiness that you have. But not to be so driven in terms of outcome orientation, because then you miss out on the actual act of running itself.
Right. No, I love it. I love it. Be happy. I mean, we do this for fun. Like, but most everybody that's listening probably isn't making their living from their running. You know, I know I'm not, but I love doing it. I love getting out there. I love breaking the sweat. I love putting in the miles and you know, just all the benefits, all the health benefits, the mental benefits, the relationships that I get out of it. It's fun. And you're right. Sometimes we can, and I'm just as guilty of this as anybody, of losing sight of the fun because of the goal, because of the PR, because of the trying to qualify for Boston, because of whatever it might be. And, you know, when you're having fun, it's just, you know, something about having fun makes the progress come a little bit quicker too, I think, in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Just like real quick to just to insert it. When I broke the 3-hour barrier in 2015, I did that with a runner who I met the year before. And we basically just like came across each other at the same mile, and we started talking. It was like a friend catching up with a friend, and then he turned to me and he said, "So I'm considering breaking the 3-hour barrier." And I was like, "Oh, sweet. Like, let me join you." Because I didn't have a time frame for that goal at Morgan Hill. And so because we were doing it together, both of us had this ease of mind, because we were like, we had someone motivating. And it was such a cool experience, because like, we did it together and we had found ourselves at mile 21. The course marshal had directed us to make a left turn, and he said, "Congratulations, guys. You got 5 miles to go. You were the third and fourth runners." And I was freaking out, because I was like, did he just say third and fourth runners, like, overall? And he's like, "Yeah." And so for me, I was like, okay, so like, not only am I having fun, I'm in contention of making the podium for the first time. And it was so cool, because like, both of us were happy for each other, regardless of like, knowing that we were each other's competition for the final podium spot. And I ended up pushing out at mile 24, but making sure that both of us had achieved the goal of sub 3. And so when I crossed the finish line and he came less than a minute later, both of us were happy. Like, both of us were happy for each other. And that experience has been really cool, just because I know the intensity of competition and how it can really get someone emotional when they don't achieve that ideal state. But for both of us, it was, we were thrilled. I mean, the first time he broke three, the first time I broke three, and we did it, you know, like, basically as like, from like, runner to runner, friend to friend. And it's like, that experience, like, I wish that can happen so much more often, because you end up like that surpasses the feeling of the medals that you can receive from those high achievements.
Are you guys still in touch at all?
Yeah. Awesome. We keep in touch. I probably, unfortunately, I'm not going to be doing Morgan Hill, I think, this year. He will be doing it. But yeah, I think that's also the cool thing about these races, is that I've done a lot of these local races enough that these runners end up becoming friends of mine. And that's just cool. I mean, because it's an intense sport, you know, the pressure to succeed can often drive people to be a bit antisocial, because they feel they're being threatened just by having runners run with them. So it's always great whenever you come across runners that have this sense of positivity, and they realize that competition actually brings you together. It doesn't separate you. And if you run with people, you actually can run faster. I mean, the psychological benefits, as well as just like that sense of camaraderie of, you know, being in it together. And I think that that's something that it's just, you have to be mindful of yourself as you're in the midst of striving for these goals. And when you can make a habit out of that, I just feel that it enhances your ability to run and enhances your ability to be a human being.
And it's fun. We'll wrap it up there. It's fun sometimes to just run with other people and enjoy somebody else's company.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, guys, again, MrMiles.org, all of Michael's contact information will be on the show notes for this episode. Anything else that we talked about, links to race reports and all that kind of good stuff, DizRuns.com/258. Michael, man, thanks for doing this again. It was fun catching up, and obviously, well, I'll keep following along with what you're doing, and looking forward to seeing how the summer and the fall plays out for you, and wishing you nothing but the best going forward, my man.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to my second chat with Michael Deza. I hope that you enjoyed the show, and I hope that you were able to glean something from some of the different topics that we broached. And as always, I would love to know what it is that stood out to you. What from this episode was your key takeaway? For me, I think it was when Michael was talking about how, you know, running has been kind of such a focus of his life for the last few years, and how he's really, you know, trying to place more focus on the holistic health of his life and, you know, the relationships and his community and all of the different areas. You know, we talked specifically about his girlfriend and how, you know, he needs to do a better job of showing that she's more important than running, because he feels that she is, but you know, there's been some sacrifices that they've both made and specifically that she's made to support his running career to this point. And, you know, it got me thinking that there are times, I think, that all of us do that. I've certainly have done that both in running and in the business side of my life, where I've kind of prioritized, you know, running and this podcast and website and all that kind of stuff over the things that really matter most, which are, you know, easily my wife and the baby and our family. You know, I mean, that's priority number one, and it should always be that way. And it really is always that way, but sometimes my actions don't support that. So it was just kind of a stark reminder that, you know, I'm not alone in that. And I would imagine that, you know, whether it's running or other things in life that take maybe too much of our focus from time to time, the importance of remembering to be more intentional about the other areas of our lives as well. So maybe work gets in the way, maybe, you know, other obligations, community things, whether it's church or volunteer groups or whatever, you know, just kind of get in the way and crowd out some of our family. Maybe we take our family for granted sometimes. You know, maybe I'm guilty of that, certainly. So just a good reminder and something that really stuck out that, you know, if you can get everything else in balance and you know, running and family and work and other obligations, you can really excel at all of those things instead of just putting all of your focus on one to the detriment of the others. That can have a negative impact on that one thing that you're focused on. So that was my takeaway, and I'd love to hear what it was for you. What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com, or the best option, head over to the show notes for this episode, DizRuns.com/258, and leave a comment. And we can go back and forth a little bit on the comment thread, and other people can jump in and chime in as well. So with that, let's wrap things up. Don't forget about the coterie. If that's something that's interested, that you might be interested in, let me know, and I'll give you some more information, and we can go from there. If not, thank you for taking the time to listen. I mean, that's the most important thing. I am so appreciative of every person that tunes in and gives up an hour or so of their time to listen to the show, whether I'm joining you for a run or a drive or doing housework, whatever it is. Thanks for plugging me into your ears and listening to me ramble. I do appreciate it. I hope you have a great rest of the day, and I can't wait to have a chance to talk to you again real soon. Take care, guys.